Hi, everyone. Before we get started with today's episode, I need to address some recent news. And also, I want to issue a trigger warning for the next minute or two. I'm going to be talking about sexual assault. So if that's trigger for you, fast forward a minute or two until we get to the start of the episode. So at the end of February 2020, a woman came forward with the story that alleged that Timothy Hutton raped her shortly after he became famous. I don't want to go into the details here, but the story was originally published on BuzzFeed News. So if you want to read the full account, you can go there and find it. What I do want to make clear here is that we here at Let's Go Steal a Podcast believe the victim and we stand with her. I've discussed this issue with my other co-host and we honestly did consider just stopping the podcast altogether. But we have at this moment in time, anyways, decided to move forward. The fact is we were fans of the show before these allegations broke. We're going to do our best to separate the character of Nate Ford from the actor who played him. And as always, we're going to apply a critical eye to what the show is saying in every instance, just the way that I feel that we have for the past three seasons of the show. But as this story develops, we might need to change this approach. So, and I'll keep you updated if we decide to do something different. And as always, I welcome your thoughts on how we should handle this going forward. Thank you. And let's move on to this episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast.
Okay. Just like that, we've said our intercession to the patron saint of podcasting, and welcome back, everybody.
We gotta pray, y'all.
As you can hear, Lisa Lynn is back with me, and we're going to be talking about the fifth episode of season five, Leverage, the Gimme a K Street Job.
Hey, y'all.
I definitely had to look up what K Street meant, because I am, despite having watched all of The West Wing, not particularly well-versed in politics in general.
Whereas you're talking to someone who has a double degree in political science and history.
Yes,
and
I'm not
also
gonna lie.
Obsessed with The West Wing, so this is my jam.
Yes, and again, I'm not going to lie to you. A lot of times Lisa will just drop names and I'm like, yeah, sure. I know who that judge is. Of course I do.
Just tell me.
I don't want to sound dumb.
Oh God.
And I'm like, well, I could name every character on Teen Wolf. Like, does that mean anything? No. Okay.
See, I can't name Teen Wolf. I just know Judge Stephanus Beebus. And Judge Bran in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and I just know, you know, Scott McCall and Stiles Stilinski and Derek Hale. But that's for a different podcast. So, in this episode of Leverage, in order to protect cheerleaders, the team take on Washington, which doesn't seem like it makes any sort of connected sense. But it does. It does. And K Street, can you tell us what K Street, what that is a reference? Obviously, that Gimme a K is like Gimme a from a cheer,
but
K Street is.
K Street, for those who don't know, the layout in DC is just really stupid and complicated. It makes no sense. It's broken up into quadrants. And there's like C Street, D Street, and K, there's indeed a K Street. But in political circles, K Street is just a shorthand and a nickname for where all the lobbyists and political action groups and stuff, where they go. And basically where elected officials go after they retire from office. Just move over to K Street and join a firm and join, you know, join a lobbying firm. So that's K Street.
Okay, thank you. Because I know that we have some listeners who are not from the United States, so even if they are well-versed in politics, they might not know that.
So it's basically a pipeline. Once you're done with elected office, you slide over to K Street.
And that's where you make the real money.
But Canada. Bam.
So we start at a cheerleading competition, and I love our first glimpse of our client is she's the coach for a cheerleading team, and they're going into like a pyramid or whatever, and she sees our bad guys, and you can tell immediately that they're our bad guys. They're well dressed and look mean. Walking by, and she like runs over and she's like, "Hey, are you the morons in charge?" And Baron, she's our bad guy, I forgot her first name, she's like, "Well, I'm the CEO, so I guess I'm the moron." And
I mean, the coach has like very like Sue Sylvester from Glee energy, like with the, I think she has tracksuit on,
pint size,
yeah. But she's not mean and evil, but like has that intense like energy, Sue energy, I feel.
Right. I was like, I don't know if I'd say that, but yeah, she's very intense for a good reason, because she's pointing out that
like serious safety issues.
Exactly. Their mats are only an inch and they should be 12 inches. And there's like all sorts of other things that could hurt the cheerleaders. And you know, she's like, "Oh, well, these fall within, you know, government guidelines." She's like, "Yeah, because government guidelines are not safe to begin with."
And you, the
safety standards for competitive cheer.
And you've written the guidelines.
Yeah. She's like, Pep, which is a great name for a cheerleading company, owns the safety administration. And they own everything, we find out in a little bit. And as she's arguing with them, they are moving through their cheerleading routine in the background, and they toss a girl in the air, and when she comes back down, she falls wrong, and everyone kind of freaks out. And even Baron, like, she kind of looks like, oh shit, and then quickly like shakes off any sort of empathy for a fellow human and like walks off.
And the coach is like no longer in bulldog mode. She's like she's trying to make sure her girls are okay.
Yeah.
So everybody's like surrounding the girl who's fallen, and it's like a whole situation.
Yeah. And you kind of get a close up on this one young blonde woman who looks especially upset, and she'll come back. She'll be important later. And Cornell, that's the name of the coach. She comes to Nate and is showing her pictures of this girl, Marcy, in the hospital. And she like didn't just like break a collarbone or a leg. The doctors think she'll eventually be able to breathe on her own. But her legs
punctured a lung or something.
I'm like, she broke her back, like something bad. And you know, she,
like, she's rolling off some stats.
Yeah, she, and these stats are real. Like, if you, like, everybody else last year. I didn't double check this one, but just like a lot of people, I watched Cheer on Netflix. And they also cite a lot of these stats. And I, just like a couple of weeks ago, when it was the hockey episode, I almost went and looked it up. And then I was like, maybe I don't want to be that depressed. So I won't look up concussion syndrome, and I won't look up these stats on cheerleading. But if you want to, please feel free. But yeah, she says, you know, this wasn't an accident, but this happened. This was negligence. Like, if she'd fallen on the proper matting, she probably would have been winded or hurt a little bit. Not too
like
bad.
A 12 inches worth of padding versus one is significant difference.
Yeah.
And especially when they're tossing these girls from 20 feet away up or something.
From 20 feet up and thrown, right?
Like, yeah. That's some serious shit, y'all.
That's some velocity. And so Nate, you know, is like, yeah, negligence is hard to prove. And how do you know it was this company's fault? And so then she starts going with the statistics that Pep Athletics controls competitive cheer. They write the safety standards, and they don't write it to protect the girls, but to be cheap.
And so they own the insurance company.
Yes. They own the insurance company. So you have to get insurance with them, but they don't pay out and all this stuff. And I'm going to read her stats, because 3% of female athletes are cheerleaders, which is not a lot. 66% of female athletic injuries come from cheer. And I'll probably bring up the show Cheer on Netflix a lot, because it's, you see how, and I mean, I was friends with people who were cheerleaders who got really injured, and I've seen cheerleaders be injured in real time. Like, it is, and they just want to keep doing it. I don't know what, like, as someone who is risk averse and doesn't like to be hurt at all or in pain, like, I do not understand it. But I had a friend who, she like dislocated her shoulder. She messed something up with her arm doing tumbling for cheer. And she was like in a sling. And the day after she got out of her sling,
she was back up, back
up. She was back tumbling and hurt herself again. It's just like, why? Why? It's not because they think this is going to be a career and they're going to make millions of dollars, because cheerleaders do not. They have a very short shelf life. It's not like you can go to the NHL or the NFL and get endorsement.
I think it's like the team aspect. They don't want to let their team down. Yeah. I think.
Yeah.
And because they depend on it. Like, I don't want to let the other girls down. Mm-hmm. I think that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah. Which is really admirable. Like, I think it's amazing that it can build this community, and it's terrifying to me though. And I think it's also amazing, like, what talented gymnasts can do with their bodies and, like, push these limits of what we think the human body can do.
Oh my God. I still remember, like, Shannon Miller and Kim Zmeskal and all those gymnasts in, like, the 1996, like, Summer Olympics, or, like, the 92 Olympics or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just, like, tumbling through the air. And I'm like, how do you do that? Especially with the floor routines. I'm like, they just jump up and do all these flips and things.
Yeah. And cheerleading is that, but you're throwing other people and you're catching other people and you're doing this all on the same floor at the same time, high speed around each other. And it's wild. And Coach Cornell here, she says she's a fully qualified gymnastics coach. And because of this accident, they blamed her and banned her from coaching. And she sees this as,
which is such BS, total BS.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And she's like, their training program that they have for coaches, like, a fry cook gets more training. And she feels very strongly, like, you know, there's this team spirit, like, you can't let other people down. She feels responsible for these young women who she coaches, and they're not going to be safe without her.
She says that to Nate, like,
yeah,
my girls aren't safe without me, because this training, whoever my replacement is inadequate. Like, my girls are going to get hurt, you know?
Yeah. But Nate says, we're going to make sure that they are safe. Do not worry. and then immediately we get to see why they're going to be safe, because they put Parker on the job. And she is not happy about it.
Like, what do I know about teenage girls? And then Nate and Sophia are like, you were one once? And she was like, not really.
Yeah, only sort of.
And she's kind of like, no cameras anywhere. I can't even go anywhere. I can't even get into the office. Like, this is bullshit.
Yeah, but I love, while they're trying to talk her into this, Sophie's also like looking into cheerleading. And she's like, did you know about this? Girls being dropped from 20 feet. It's unbelievable. And Parker's like, I know, right? 20 feet? Walk it off.
And then Sophie had to be like, Parker, for normal people, that's...
You don't do that.
Do that.
And then this is great, because I was... I think when Holly was on earlier this season, she was talking about poor Hardison having to, like, zip line everywhere and not liking it on his dates with Parker. But she has this eureka moment where she's like, oh, so all those times I pushed Hardison off a building and he was all like, he wasn't just being funny. So she's like, okay. So the things that I think are fun, other people think are
terrifying. Or like there's this, like, in place in China where there's like this glass bridge and it's just like, and it's like scary as hell. And like these rickety bridges. And I'm just like, why do you do that? Like, why? It's not fun. I am severely acrophobic, y'all. I have a serious fear of heights. So this is just a no-go for me.
Yeah.
Like, no. But like, such growth for Parker that she put it together.
But then this adorable exchange where Elliot says, I thought it was funny, Parker. And then he winks at Hardison.
And then, which automatically gets Hardison's go. And she's like,
no way in hell was it funny. You're always
a really, bro? Really, bro?
Calls him a Himalayan tree frog. And then he's like, guys, maybe focus?
Like, Hardison is in his feelings.
Yeah. He's fine. And he gets back on the task. And gives us this history of Pep Athletics. They started out selling workout clothes. Now they have 22 subsidiaries and shell companies. And they run competitive cheer, which is, I think, the case with competitive cheer in our world as well. There's like one or two companies that run everything.
Everything is done through these companies. Like the clothes, the competition, the insurance, the safety standards, equipment. Everything.
Training for coaches, and that they televise them as well. Make a lot of money. So and they profit off teenage girls the whole way.
And Maddie, who we met earlier, Maddie Barron, is a former cheerleader.
Yes,
and comes into play earlier.
Mm-hmm, later. And Sophie says the mafia has a less complicated setup because they've got their structure is in such a way as to let them hide the fact that it's all the same company.
Oh, kind of like in the Miracle Job, right? When they're saying like Kennedy Corps, which is a subsidiary of this company, which is a subsidiary of this company, which is a subsidiary for Kennedy Corps. Like, yes. the guy who wanted to do Bibletopia, Andrew something. Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yes. And Nate even says, like, you know, with the mafia, you need a federal task force and a RICO case to bring them down. So then we meet Wendy Barron. She's the ex-cheerleader you were saying earlier. She moved Pep into cheer, and now she's, like, running the sport.
Yeah. She started with a clothing company and then just expanded to all these, like, other aspects of the business. Yeah.
Yeah. But Nate points out that the crux of this is that cheerleading is not a sport. It's an activity. And Sophie's like, what? And of course, Elliot knows that a sport has legally mandated safety standards.
So the goal becomes, let's get this qualified as a sport so those safety standards kick in.
Yeah. And also, a for-profit company can't run a sport. So that's why Pep doesn't want cheer to become a sport. Because if it does, then they can't run it and they can't make all the money that they do now. So, of course, that's what we got to do, right? We got to make it a sport so that the safety standards fit in.
So we got to go steal Congress.
All right. That's it's a job for the Federal High School Athletics Committee.
And then we get a nice pan and some nice, like, basic, like, establishing shots of DC. We get the monument, we get the white on all this stuff, and mm-hmm. then basically Sophie's like, this is Grifter's paradise,
right? She's like, oh, I'm so excited, I love DC.
She doesn't know what she's in for.
She does not. She does come full circle though, so don't worry. Do not worry. And the interior, though, is a building that they've used several times in Leverage. I believe they also used it in the Fairy Godparents Job. Like, I feel like that main staircase looks a lot like the one that they have in the school. But it's definitely at least one other one.
Oh, like when they,
talking to the parents.
When Nate was introduced as the new, like, headmaster.
Yeah.
And with that horrible hair and that horrible accent.
So great. Yeah. So great. So.
So Hardison is feeling cute. He's like, okay, we got this. He's feeling cute, see? He's feeling cute, right?
He is. Sophie's feeling cute. She's excited. She loves shady backroom deals. Elliot's not. He feels cute because he never doesn't feel cute, but. He is not excited because he says we work outside the law, not smack dab in the middle of it. But like, Nate's like, chill. It's all right.
And Horace is like, this is a system. If it's a system, we can hack it. He's feeling cute.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I got HB 505 introduced. In 20 minutes, they're not going to know what hit them. I'm feeling cute. We got this.
Right, it's and a bill to keep high school girls out of wheelchairs. Who wants to vote against that?
Congressman J.J. LaGrange.
Yep, yep, he does. J.J. LaGrange is played by an actor who has been, they were talking in the commentary, who's been in like every single Star Trek franchise. Oh. Like they're like, I think he wins the prize for like Steve Rankin for like most aliens played.
Oh, Lord.
He's been in a lot of things, including Veronica Mars and other stuff. But yeah. So, yeah, he claims since he's was a quarterback in high school, he knows a thing or two about cheerleaders.
Which is very gross. So we don't like Congressman J.J. LaGrange.
Extremely gross. And the thing that he knows about cheerleaders from being a high school quarterback is that they do not want big government up in their business. Is that what you know about cheerleaders, JJ?
Okay. I mean, Hardison is starting to feel a little less cute. He's a little less cute.
Yeah. So Nate has Sophie check the body language of everybody to see who they're voting for. And she was like, ooh. She's like, 0-4, 7 against. This is a bad. And he's still pontificating.
I mean, and she's like, when a Baron is marching down and she's livid, like, how do we not know this bill was up? So
yeah, she's real angry. And they Nate's like, we have to stop this now. Like, we have to stop this whole session. And Hardison's like, I can't hack the agenda while it's in session. So he uses his phone to create feedback in the sound system to shut down the meeting. And it's great because he starts it and then he like hands it over to Elliot and like lets Elliot play with the app. And he's like, just press that button.
So Elliot has a new toy that he's enjoying.
And it's just really cute.
So Elliot is still feeling cute. Like Hardison's a little less feeling a little less cute, but Elliot's still feeling cute.
Yeah. And Baron, Wendy is, she's happy that this has happened. She's like, okay, maybe this won't be a complete disaster. We've got some more time.
But can we also talk about how, like, inappropriately, like, borderline abusive she is to her aide? Like, she does not treat him well at all.
No.
Not okay.
They, in the commentary, I didn't even talk about when this episode aired. Let me say that real quick. We got just really excited about corruption in Congress. So this episode aired August 19th, 2012. It was directed by Jonathan Frakes, which, you know, Steve Rankin, that makes sense. And it was written by Jeremy Bernstein, who did the Cross My Heart job and one other one that I can't think of right now. You can go back, look it up if you want. But they were saying that they had like a whole, I'm going to talk about that later. That's like spoilery. Anyways, talk about that at the end. Remind me. So yeah, she's very mean to her assistant.
Mm-hmm.
It is true. So they've found some empty office.
They set up shop. This is
their
new
shop in, and it's just like, there's paintings in the background covered in tarps and like just kind of
it's
dusty.
A very makeshift like HQ at the moment.
Yeah, I love it. I just, you know, oh, we'll take this closet, cool. And they get a rundown on all of the committee and kind of split them up because they need at least 4 people to vote for this, and they got to figure out who the most likely they are to flip. And so then they each take one. So Hardison gets Congresswoman Jane Burkus. She's numbers driven. She's good on women's issues.
Let's frame this of like, let's, we're protecting these girls. They should get, they got this.
Exactly. Congressman Zahn is like how you assume every congressperson is.
I believe we let go to a scene of him in a literal smoke-filled back room. A literal smoke-filled back room.
Yeah. And he's being investigated for fundraising irregularities. So if we help him, he will help us.
I think, like they said, if you get rid of his problems, you'll get help us get rid of ours.
Right. There's Congressman Caballo, who he's a baby. He won his seat.
He's very skittish.
Won his seat in the populist upswell, and he's having trouble maintaining it. So if we can keep him in office, he'll vote for us.
He's like and popping then, like caffeine pills or Red Bull or something. Like,
oh, I thought it was very jittery. I thought they were antacid tablets.
Probably antacid.
This poor baby has some.
He's very stressed, y'all.
Just manic little hamster. And then finally, we've got JJ LaGrange. And I think we know everything about him from how we heard him talk earlier. He's a consummate Washington insider. He's like third generation.
But he's key. He's the chairman. If we don't get the chairman, it goes nowhere. Yeah. To quote the dean, Rep. John Dingell, may he rest in peace. May he rest. Like, he's famous for this quote. If I let you write substance of the law and you let me write procedure, I'll screw you every time. Hence why Nate says, if we don't get him on board, it's dead on arrival, because he's going to have tons of like procedural tricks to kill it. So, Dean John Dingell, he lives on. Yep. Let you write the rules, they'll screw you every time. So we got to get the chairman on board.
All right. Yeah. And Elliot is suspicious, or he's like, not suspicious. He's, what's the word? Not optimistic. You know, he's like, you're talking about running a con on four separate marks at the same time. And he's like, no. Not marks. Elected officials.
Which is like a whole separate species.
Right? And then he says that we're going to be eating out of our hand by dinner. And then it, like, you know, quick cut. Several hours later, everyone, like, reconvenes and looks exhausted. Except for
Nate. Nobody's feeling cute.
Nate feels adorable. So then we see everyone's attempts. Hardison.
Really not feeling cute.
Nope, because Berkus is upset because this bill would mean that $20 million is going to go to equipment and training, and that's going to take money. She doesn't want to take money from arts, music, school lunches, or God forbid, actual women's sports. And then she like says mean things about cheerleaders.
Brandy with an eye, like very stereotypical. Like,
yeah. I'm like, this was 8 years ago. But I feel like in 2020, we've moved beyond that. We've moved on to Karen jokes, which...
is it possible she was bullied at high school by those cheerleaders? And is that kind of like where that's coming from?
Maybe. And I think cheerleading has changed drastically in the last several decades. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. She doesn't maybe know what it means for these cheerleaders who are like, yeah, we cheer at sports ball games because, like, that's where we get our fundraising, but the real stuff is, you know,
competition
in the gym. Yeah,
I mean, like, and it's such a cliche that the cheerleaders are the popular girls. They are the homecoming queen, they're the prom queens, and they are like the queen bees at the high school. So, like, you know, I think that's all the subtext of, like, she's trying, wants to stick it to those
mean girls. Yeah. I think I'm just like, well, that's a tired stereotype, but okay. It might still be true. I don't know.
Yeah.
But so she's like,
you are right. We moved on to Karen jokes. So
I think they're much more warranted. But Berkey says, unless you can find $20 million lying around in the federal budget that's unclaimed, I'm not doing that. So now that's obviously what Hardison has to figure out. He says it's hard. It's the system, but it's also War and Peace with math. And Sophie's like, well, at least you're dealing with money, because we see her go in to Caballo's office and try to say, hey, we want to fund your campaign, but only if you'll.
With this very nasal accent.
Yeah, I'm not sure where he's from.
The Cleveland Moncliefs. So
from
Ohio.
Yeah, that's true. It's right there in the name, Christina. But he's like, I don't want money. Like, I need corn subsidies. Or no, he says, I know you want corn subsidies.
But I can't make it happen. I'm just...
Yeah, like that's how I get reelected, is if I can.
Hence why he is like popping in acids like it's candy.
Yeah.
Though I always thought corn subsidies was like an Iowa thing, but who knows?
I feel like a lot of the Midwest states have corn, right?
Yeah. But yeah.
But yeah, so then this is going to start the ball rolling on Sophie.
Feeling very not cute.
Sophie does so much in this episode. You know, usually we're like, oh my gosh, Hardison works his butt off and does 80 million things. Like in this episode, Sophie literally plays like 18 different people wearing the same outfit.
She needs an assistant.
She gets one. We'll get to that in a minute. Yes, Charlie, I know.
But Sophie's feeling very not cute because she's like, what the hell? Like,
yeah, she says, cash, of course. Land, sure. Art, yes. Please.
Always.
Corn subsidies? Not so much. And then I love everyone's like, oh, you think you have a bad? At least you're stealing. Because Parker's on the phone. And she's like, they have this place sewn up so tight that she can't get anywhere because everything is under surveillance. Mm-hmm. And
she's supposed to be... She has to appear that she's actually like trying to coach these girls.
And she sets up lasers on these cones and nobody is excited. And she was like, but
laser grid. But do you not understand? Laser grid.
Right? And one girl like is like, Madison says, I don't feel good. Can I be excused? And she's like, laser grid, Madison? She says, they're so jaded. Amazing.
I mean, like you
yeah,
but like you said, the only one who's feeling cute is like Nate, because he talks to Congressman Zahn and he literally who was like, name your price.
Yeah. And he's like, all right, like what do you want and what's it worth to you? Like, what? Okay,
lunch.
Yeah. And then the hardest of all of these grifts is Elliot's. And originally they were going to have it switched where it was Nate who was trying to run this con on LaGrange.
Like go head to head, right?
Yeah, because, you know, because as we see in a minute, every time they like try to get to him on one level, he's like
not
buying it. And
that's not what makes me tick.
Right? And Nate was so confident that you can. Anybody in Washington you can buy that it was supposed to like throw him for a loop, but they decided for the story that they're setting up for this season, it was better for Elliot to do it on his own.
When he figures it out, he has that conversation with Nate at the end of the episode.
And we'll talk about that.
But like, yes. When we get there, we're getting ahead of ourselves. But so yeah, so Elliot is feeling very not cute.
Mm-hmm. And he's saying that he works for a lobbyist firm that's called Roskin Consulting, named for Mark Roskin, veteran director of Leverage. And yeah, so he tries to donate to buy his boat. And he's like, people don't donate to me to buy my boat. They donate because they already know how I'm going to vote and they like that.
And if you think you can buy me, you got another thing coming.
Right? So Nate's like, all right, let's go. And Elliot's like, I don't like this.
And then so like Nate and Elliot's like, well, maybe the unicorns do exist. An honest politician with integrity. And Nate's like, nah. That money's just not his hook.
Couldn't be. Yeah.
So he's like, try again, Elliot. So Elliot's feeling not very cute.
Sophie has changed outfits and she is talking to somebody else about corn subsidies. And
Congresswoman from Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Green Hill. And she becomes Deborah Scott of the Scottsdale Scots. Which, like, I love how many people, like, don't even bat an eye when she says this shit.
Von Cleefs of the Cleveland Von Cleefs.
Right? And she, Congresswoman Greenhill is like, you know what corn subsidies is code for, right? And then goes on this whole thing about it. It's ethanol and it's still burning carbon.
Not clean energy.
And we should move to sustainable stuff like solar, which Arizona has a ton of. And so she's not going to subsidize corn in Ohio unless she can get at least as much for solar subsidies in Arizona.
Which is very DC. You trade.
Mm-hmm.
You trade. You want this? What do I get out of it? Can I count on you for this or what? So, yeah. So what starts the whole bull rolling?
It's very, I know an old lady who swallowed a fly. Swallowed the bird to catch the fly, swallowed the cat to catch the bird.
Yeah. So now Sophie needs to find clean solar subsidies so she can get the corn subsidies. But nay, nay. It doesn't stop there.
Nope. Yeah, she goes, and I love that we don't get it all in one go. Like, we go back to her every so often, and it gets more tangled and, like, bigger.
And I think she's wearing, like, semi-aggressive pearls. I feel like these are kind of similar to the pearls she was wearing in the King George job. Like, semi-aggressive. Not aggressive.
You know what?
Semi-aggressive.
I think they might be the same pearls.
But not aggressive, the pearls are not as aggressive.
Yeah, they have, they're large, but there's, like, a chain in between them, so it's not, like, solid pearls. And they're not, like, blindingly white.
And she's only just wearing that one chain. In the King George job, it was very aggressive pearls. She was wearing, like, two or three strings.
She has several, and there was, like, a rosette involved. It was not cute, in my opinion.
Very aggressive. Very aggressive pearls. But, like, Sophie's like increasingly not cute. She's feeling increasingly not cute. But she's like, what is even happening?
She's the best grifter ever, though. So she keeps going. She doesn't care. Elliot is back to trying to get LaGrange. And this time they are offering him more power. If he doesn't want money for his election, for his campaign, we're going to give him more power.
And what politician doesn't want power, right?
Exactly. Hardison has found this money. In fact, he's found $50 million.
So he's feeling a little cute. He's feeling cute.
But it's earmarked for an armored vehicle prototype the Pentagon no longer wants. So he's like, look, here's the money. I found the money. And she's like, we can't use that money. It's defense. You can't.
It's earmarked for a whole separate thing. We can't touch it.
Yeah.
And y'all, I feel like that is very, like, realistic. There are, like, archaic, like, rules and procedures for how appropriation these things get done. An education bill is an education bill. Like, it's just, you can't mess with it. And
yeah.
And then, like, Hardison is feeling not cute again. He was feeling cute because he found the money. He thought he solved the problem. But then when Congresswoman Burkus is like, no, if you try to do this, you're going to have to go back and start all over again. And then Hardison is like, but they don't want the money. And Burkus is like,
they don't want it. And it's like, wah, wah, wah.
So Hardison is not feeling cute again.
No. And I love her assistant as she leaves, rolls her eyes at him. Like, yeah, dummy.
And one last, but they don't want it.
Yeah, please. We go back to Elliot, who is trying to entice LaGrange with this poster that they've made up of electric LaGrange for Senate. And he's like, sorry, I've spent a lot of time becoming the big fish in my little pond, and that's the way I like it. What?
So Elliot is feeling frustrated and not cute.
Yeah.
So power isn't this hook. So he's like, is he truly a unicorn? Like, is he actually? And Nate's like, no. Try again. You just haven't found his hook. Try again.
Exactly. I think the next Sophie thing is my favorite of her bits because she's still in the same outfit as talking to Congresswoman Greenhill. But she and this congressman from New York, and he calls her Miss Rochester, probably of the Rochester Rochesters.
With a very strong, like, Long Island, New York accent. Yes. Very strong.
But also, did you notice that the volume that they're talking to each other at is so loud? They're like,
very hey, New York.
Miss Rochester. Like, it's so great. And she wants his solar subsidies that are earmarked for New York. And she's like, you know, Arizona's got more sun. Like, let's just split the difference. And then he wants a favor from her.
I'm going to need something from like, you.
Right? And she's like, of course. Parker's found a way to bypass some of the security back at the cheerleading place. And she has them in a pyramid. And she has one of the girls point this, like, disruptor gun. And then she just leaves her there. Oh, it's not a disruptor. She's like getting
like a microphone thing.
Yeah, she can read. She can hear her. And Baron's talking about some projections and that something hinges on having
money. Money has to get together. So they're
but they don't know what for.
But like, so Parker really needs to go get into that office and find out what's going on.
Yeah. And Parker's like, yeah, but I can't. There's, you know, cameras. And if there's not cameras, there's teenagers everywhere.
And literally there's like, the girls are following her around. They're like, coach.
Yeah. And also they're still standing in this pyramid. And they're like, could we let her down? And she's like, why? She's fine. She might get dizzy or something. And Madison's very worried about this.
Parker's like, fine, bring her down.
Right. I think it should be noted that all of these cheerleaders who are in this episode are actual cheerleaders. You have to be. This is not something you can fake as an extra. And they found like a cheerleader dojo in the area and like recruited all of them. And it's great. I love that they're not all like skinny blonde girls. There's like lots of body diversity, and there are men there too, which I think is really cool. So Nate and Elliot are talking about what they're supposed to do next, and Elliot's like, you're supposed to be the mastermind. He doesn't want power, doesn't want money, maybe, like you said, he's a unicorn, he's an honest man. And Nate's like, it's so cute that you think that, Elliot. Everyone has a weakness you can exploit. And he says, do you? And Nate's like, no. You? And Elliot's like, no. and he says, maybe it doesn't fit into your worldview. It doesn't fit into your worldview, Nate, but there are some people out there that just want to serve. And I know I served with them, saying like, I wasn't that person, but I knew these people.
So then Nate being Nate is like, well, you can use that too.
I can use anything, he says. You should do that. So now he's like, you know, you should take a job on the punditry circuit, which you said a lot of politicians do.
But then McGrady's just like, no, I don't plan to leave my seat for a very, very, very long time.
Mm-hmm. And he,
which is also true, because the incumbency rate would mean like retention rate is ridiculously high. Due to a lot of factors, which we do not have time to go into.
Right.
But yes.
So yeah, he's pretty confident that he's, you know, got his re-election tied up. And Elliot's like, yeah, but 8 years out? That's probably not then. And we know because we've got the polling numbers. And LaGrange is like, no, couldn't possibly. But he says that they've got the math. The boys back at the...
He's biting. That fish is biting. He's taking the bait.
So Nate's feeding him info and talking about some college 10-year expansion plan. And that means that young voters will come in, and which are not exactly JJ.
Your base of support.
Yeah.
I mean, and that tracks with how they do polling. They're looking at different demographic trends and, you know, and generally speaking, how does this demographic vote and that demographic vote? So this really tracks. So this is what these trends are, exactly what they're looking at.
Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So LaGrange says he wants to see this model in 2 hours. And Elliot's like, you can fake all that polling stuff I was talking about, right? And Nate's like, Hope so. But so, as they walk by, Snyder, the henchman for Baron, he takes a picture of them with his phone and then goes and shows her this picture. And the picture on his phone is like one that that actor actually took of them walking by on set, which I think is cool.
So, like, Elliot's feeling kind of cute again. He kind of figured, okay, we got to LaGrange. So now it's up to you all to make up all that mumbo jumbo.
Yeah. But now Snyder and Baron are suspicious. They've been tipped off by somebody on the hill, and they've seen that they've been talking to LaGrange, and that they were at the committee meeting for HR 505. So they're like, we need to do something to make sure Congressman LaGrange stays where we want him. And then Snyder says, are you sure I can control, you can control him? And Baron is very smug and says, I was a cheerleader in high school. I think I know a few things about quarterbacks, which I think is amazing because we have like this a bookend of like, I was a quarterback. I know a few things about cheerleaders. And then like the other, like the flip side of that. And you're just like, this is gross both ways. But like, good job. Like, yeah.
Right?
Yuck, yuck, yuck.
It's very icky.
Yeah. We didn't even talk about this actress who is inhumanly beautiful. Every time she's in something, I'm like, why?
You What's look her like name? You created.
Her name is Danielle Bisutti. Oh. And she's, what has she? She's been in a lot of stuff, but
she has that beauty mark on her foot, which is very distinctive.
She was in, oh, she dated Ron on Parks and Rec for a while. Stop. Yes, stop. Come here.
What's Charles? What are you doing?
She's just been in a bunch of stuff. Like, you know, a couple episodes here and there of everything. Yeah. And yeah, she's just like upsettingly pretty.
I also feel like she's playing it very confident and very smug. Mm-hmm. Like, she's very smug.
She's very beautiful and she's always gotten what she wanted. And she's good at manipulating people and setting up. And she took pep from selling sweatpants to running cheer. So,
to running it like an industry.
Yeah.
A whole industry.
Yeah. So, like, that's pretty powerful. And she's very smug about it. So, let's see, where are we? Blah, blah, blah. All right.
So they decided, like she's saying, I know a thing or two about quarterbacks.
Yeah. And everybody else meets back up in the empty office to like, let's check in. Let's see how everyone's doing. And, you know, Sophie's like walking down some stairs and now she's trying to improve the air quality standards in Massachusetts. That's where she's at.
To get logging rights. That will give me, like, yeah. And then
I have the whole thing. It's like, for logging rights to get me the redistricting deal, that gets me the grant funding, that gets me the solar subsidies, that finally gets me the bloody stinking corn subsidies. She's like, you have to be a grifter to run government, and I'm going to need an assistant.
Like, Sophie is not feeling cute. She's just like, I need an assistant.
And don't worry, everyone, she will get one. And then Hardison's like reading all these like old laws and he's like found $7 million for mad cow testing, but no one checks their tests for mad cow because no one wants to know that they've got mad cows. And yeah, but they can't give it to them. Doesn't make sense.
Mandates that funding needs to be there, then that money is just going to stay there.
Yeah. And Parker is like, you know, the meat's in an hour. I haven't found anything yet, but I can use the meat as cover and I can go up on the roof, short out the security system, blah, 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 get into her office. But now Madison's missing. So she's like, ah!
Damn it!
I lost cheerleader.
And she's like, the last thing I need on top of everything else.
Right? Missing cheerleaders. Ah. And I say that all the time. I just love everything about the show. But it's really a fun scene, which is next, where Parker and Nate are interrogating this young woman.
Oh, God.
Ashley. And they've got, like, a lamp shining in her face.
And like, Parker is taking the role of bad cop way too literally.
Oh, yeah. It's a really cool scene, like, the way that Jonathan Frakes set it up. You can see Nate and Parker, but then there are, like, two other mirrors, so you can see them from different angles as well. And it really makes you feel like this poor child is surrounded. And she's like, are you going to call my parents? Am I in trouble? And they just want to know where Madison is, because Ashley's her best friend.
And, like, and she gives had up. To be like, slow your roll, Parker. Like, let's take it down a notch.
Yeah.
And I feel like so... Parker's very proud of herself. You two are best friends. Best friends tell her things. Are you going to tell? Like she's applying her knowledge, see? She's right? applying knowledge.
Yes. Back in Soapy's new office, she has not one but two assistants who are answering as different
people. Phones are ringing off the hook.
Yeah. So the guy is answering for Miss Von Cleves. Somebody else is answering for Miss Scott, like
Miss Fink. Somebody, yeah. And then she's like, "Someone get me Congressman Fink or something."
Oh, not yet. Sophie's in the other in the inner office, dressed in Middle Eastern, like a garb, and talking to a couple guys. And she's like, "All right, so you're gonna see that Massachusetts gets the contract for the new military personnel database, and you're gonna see that the land is leased to the general for the new airbase in the Persian Gulf." So she's like,
with a very like good accent. So kudos to Gina for pulling off all those accents.
She was like six accents in one day. Like it's all of those scenes were like shot in one day. She's like,
it's a lot of accents.
Yeah. So yeah, Hardison's still going through ancient statutes from 1884. 5 million earmarked for vocational training for millers, blacksmiths, and haberdashers.
And she's like, can we get any of this like reclassified as a haberdashery?
And then Sophie's like, I'll see what I can do. And then she says, Ginger, which is a West Wing reference. And that's when she wants Congressman.
Oh, Bingo. They said that on the commentary of West Wing.
Oh, reference. Yeah. They talked about West Wing a bunch. And they're like, well, it couldn't actually be, they're like, oh, so this makes us in the West Wing universe, right? Because we got Ginger. And he's like, yeah, but no, because Ginger's working at the White House, so.
Not so much. It's so cool, she's just like, wiggling out of the Middle Eastern garb, and then she just changes her accent, and then she just sticks her head out, give me Congressman Fink or something, and they're like, yes ma'am!
And it's like, why isn't Sophie in politics?
She would clean up.
Yeah. Parker finds Madison. She's down in the basement. And she has, as we've kind of seen in the background, she's really kind of consumed that she is the reason that Madison got hurt. She was her spotter. And so Parker has to use her feelings. And really opens up. And it's weird that Nate's just standing there and no one asks why this man is there. But Nate is us and watching her proudly. And you know, she talks about she's not afraid of things that she should be or that normal people are afraid of. She's afraid of letting down the people that she cares about.
I'm like, oh my god.
Right? And she tells her, you don't have to compete if you don't want to compete, but I think your friends are going to feel a lot safer knowing that you're there instead of having no one there. And Madison's like, she nods, and Parker's like, okay, did that work? Because I get to go all the way up to the roof, so. But as she, like, leaves, Nate asks, like, well, you know, how did you know to get down here? And apparently they said in the commentary, we skirted over it really fast, because it's like, well, everyone knows how to get down here because there's no security cameras, and it's like, what are these teens getting up to down in the basement? Like, we know they're getting down to in the basement. But Parker gets excited. Yeah.
I mean, they, like, literally, like, the camera goes to a vent.
Yeah. Sparker's like, ha-ha, okay. Okay. Sophie has finally locked down those corn subsidies.
She's feeling cute again.
Hardison's figured out the budget.
He's feeling cute.
And now we can count on Nate's lunch buddy. So that's 3 of the 4.
Feeling cute.
So Elliot just has to lock in LaGrange. Mm.
The big one. Because like we said before, if we don't lock down the chairman, all the rest is for nothing.
Exactly. And so he's like, all right. And then something came up. LaGrange can't make their meeting because he is at the cheerleading headquarters accepting the announcement of the Pep Athletics JJ LaGrange cheerleading scholarship.
And just like that, Elliot's feeling not so cute.
Nope. He's very proud to be associated with a fine example of American entrepreneurial spirit. And Elliot's like, that's it. That's his hook to get his name on a scholarship and a big yearbook picture blown up.
And he's like, you met a politician?
Right. I guess
attention.
Right.
I mean, like, that whole quip about, like, the most dangerous place is between a politician and a camera. Like,
yeah. So now he's publicly tied himself to Pep Athletics. So there's no way he's going to vote against them. And Parker's like, well, that's not it. We got more bad news. She's in the office and she sees that Baron is planning on buying Pep. That's why she's talking about that money. And she's going to take it private. Which is why she was so upset that the bill almost failed. Because if the bill fails, Pep's stock price will go through the roof.
Or something like that. Yeah.
I don't understand why.
Like, okay, this is corporations, and corporations was a very, very long time ago, y'all.
Okay. Because the next line they say she can't afford that. If she already owns the business, the company, before the bill fails, she cleans up. So she wouldn't be able to afford to buy it if the stock prices went up, which it would if it was guaranteed that it wouldn't be protected federally because Congress said it's not a sport and it's not going to be a sport for a long time because we're not going to get this another bill like this. Okay.
It's interesting because mostly private companies want to go public. It's very rare that like, it's the other way around. A public company becomes private company again. Public meaning, like, it's openly traded on the stock market, et cetera. Whereas, like, a closed company would be more like stocks and stuff like you see with, like, a small business, like a restaurant. Like, it's just the shareholders are just the family members. So it's not going public. So it's very rare that, like, it goes the other way, a public company going back to private. So,
right. Okay. Yeah. Good. I was like, this sounds weird, but I believe you. Like, whatever you say, Leverage, I'm just here for that.
Sure. Right. Sure.
So
the gears in Nate's head are turning. So the pieces of the puzzle are coming together. So he's seeing what's what, like, you know.
Yeah. But the fallout of this, so they accelerated things too fast. And so she's scrambling to get this money together before anything happens. But Parker points out, if she buys Pep, that means even less oversight for the cheerleaders because she can really control everything.
So what's Nate's solution? More acceleration.
Yes. Hit that gas pedal. So everybody's like on their mark. And this is great because we get a parallel of the competition starting and the cheerleaders saying, ready, ready, let's go. And then we have Nate saying ready, Hardison saying ready, Sophie and Elliot and Parker saying ready, and Nate saying let's go, which is so good. And he's standing creepily backstage at this cheerleading competition, and I'm like, somebody call the cops. But Baron's like, you seem to be popping up all over the place, and she kind of like
being very, very smug.
She's being smug, but also like flirty, and she like keeps looking at his lips and like.
You know how I got to where I am. People always underestimate cheerleaders. I didn't, and that's why I have a $300 million company or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Nate, I think like Nate is like kind of needling her because he's just kind of still looking away. He's like, he's not even really like engaging with her, really. Like, not responding to the flirting, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, which pushes her buttons because she's used to being able to flirt and get a reaction out of someone and to get what she wants.
Right. He tells her that he's moved the vote up again for HR 505. And then we see a flashback of Elliot, because she's like, how'd you do that? And Elliot has paid off Congressman Zahn. And Nate tells her that the bill's going to fail before you can get your money together. And then it's bye, bye, bye out. And that's when she's like trying to flirt with him. And she like asks him his name and he just like looks at her. And then this is my favorite reference of the episode. She says, okay, then bring it on. Which is one of the best movie franchises of all time. It's up there with Fast and the Furious. So
she goes back to her
minion. Ready. She's got her on the hook. And
back so in she's office, like, find me the money.
Exactly. We've got 22 money companies under our umbrella. Pull anything you can. And he's, you know, just furiously like trying to figure it out. And Hardison's so, watching.
And this is where Hardison starts to feel very cute. Mm-hmm.
So he's like, you're swimming in my pool now, Guppy. And every time Snyder tries to dip into a company's money, there's a warning that
the like a regulation. Is illegal, yeah.
A 1938 labor law, a sweepstake thing that they can't touch that money. There's a lot of restrictions.
They find out CCTV is under federal investigation.
For indecency, and we see Sophie like
with in a southern hair. Accent.
Oh my gosh. I can see her hoo ha, sir.
And Hardison. Rolodex. And Hardison has all these like regulations and books. Like he's like, bring it on. He's feeling very cute. He's like, bring it, you know?
Yes.
Feeling very cute. Like on a scale of 1 to 10, he's feeling like a 15 in terms of cute. Very cute.
I mean, he's correct. He's adorable. Baron leaves Snyder and says, find the money. I don't care where you get it. And call me when it's the transfer done. Meanwhile, the wolves, Parker's cheerleading team are about to go on. And she runs up and she like, she's like, I bet you guys could use a pep talk right about now. And then she says, for Marcy. They're like, for Marcy. And they yell, go Wolves. And they
it's
go
out. It's very cute. It's
so cute. And Nate and Baron are standing there again. And she's like, my assistant found the money.
She's taunting him at this point.
She is.
2, 4, 6, 8, who do we annihilate? And that was just rude.
That's tacky is what that is. And, you know, this is when she says the thing earlier about don't, you know, people under.
This is almost like her evil speech of evil. I feel like this is her evil speech of evil.
It's kind of late for an evil speech of evil. You know, they're usually a little earlier, but, I mean, it works.
Yeah.
But Nate says, you know, cheerleaders built me a $300 million a year company because I didn't underestimate them. And Nate's like, you know, I didn't really underestimate you. I think I estimated you just about. Wait for it. And her phone rings. And she, like, gets on. And he, like, leans over to listen to this phone call. Like, gets in her bubble. And
her Snyder is like, we got problems.
The federal agents are here.
So Baron is no longer feeling cute either. She's no longer feeling cute.
Because now she's on the hook for insurance fraud.
Because I think, yeah. So she's like, where did you get the money?
The National Cheerleading Insurance and Underwriters. Because they never pay out. Yep, they never pay out. And they've got a lot of money sitting right there. So
And Hardison, being cute, shut off all these other sources, so they had to use that insurance money, and which explains why Nate is like, let's accelerate it. So it makes it so that was the only way they could get that money together. So we get the insurance fraud. And Wendy Aaron is feeling very not cute. She realized what happened.
And she tries to blame it on Snyder. She tries to say, I didn't authorize this deal. He just did it. And LaGrange is there watching the competition as well. And he's holding, he comes up and they're like fighting about it. And because he's like, oh, I'm here to take a picture with Miss Barron. And she's freaking out.
And then now there's talk of the RICO racketeering. Well, wait,
first there's talk of a bribe.
Oh, yes. Because yes,
LaGrange has taken this bribe that's hiding in the trophy he's holding. And he's like, what? And he shakes the trophy like you do. And money falls out of the bottom. And he's just flummoxed. Like, I don't understand what's happening. Which is true. He did not think he was getting bribed.
No.
But yes, then we find out that all they had to prove was that the people that work for you committed insurance fraud and bribery. And as the CEO, you're now up for RICO charges, which harkens back to talking about how this is as complicated as the mafia and how you need a federal task force and a RICO charge. So they take her away and she's like, let go of me, let go of me.
Feeling very not cute.
Oh, gosh. And LaGrange is like, what the hell just happened? Did I just accept a bribe? I like that he says this out loud.
And then Elliot, like, is just kind of like feeds and like, well, maybe, sir. I mean, if I were you, I would put as much distance as I can between me and Pep if I were you, sir.
Right. An immediate cut to the congressional meeting where LaGrange has changed his tune.
This is about protecting our children.
And this, we can't protect them.
What is this all God's body even here for?
And they, you know, everybody that they need raises their hands.
And Marcy is there in the room.
Mm-hmm. She's in a brace. She's in a wheelchair, but she is breathing on her own. She's looking okay. And after they do that, LaGrange comes over and shakes her hand. And
which just proves that his hook is that he is an attention whore.
Yeah. And he says, but there's not really any press around for that. I do think like having his name on the J.J. LaGrange Scholarship for Injured Female Athletes.
But it's still a crowd. He's working the crowd.
And that's going to have his name on it in perpetuity. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's feeling cute.
Oh, yeah. And then he, like, turns to Parker and says, hi, how are you?
Which is a very political thing to do.
Right?
Like, but just, Parker, hi.
Parker says, I don't vote. And he says, oh, you will. Yeah, but probably not for you.
I worked for a state rep. This is very on brand that you shake everybody's hand. You say hello to everybody. And everybody is your friend. Everybody is your friend.
Yeah. As someone who knows a lot of local city council members, I'm a good friend of several city council members and a mayor.
Which is big.
I mean, I do like our mayor. Like,
which is just like, cannot be me, because I just cannot be in a position where I have to like, screw a smile on my face and just shake everybody's hand and be like and act like I want to be there when I don't want to be there. It's just on my face. And that's just a skill I do not possess, y'all. I do not.
It's all right. Oh, we should figure out what part of your chart that was in. That might be one of your Scorpio parts.
It's still not in my inbox, by the way.
Aww.
We'll figure that out later. We'll figure it out.
It's weird.
But JJ is like, you will, you'll vote. You'll be voting.
She's like, okay. Sophie's standing over with Hardison and a clerk comes up to her and gives her tickets and she's like trying to figure out what accent she needs to do, and she like switches out three. She's like, oh, that's great, thanks. And he's like, what was that about? And she's like, oh, I'm just planning a little trip to the Gulf. The military are breaking ground on Fort Devereux. And she's like, I love government.
I mean, if she managed to get a fort named after herself, she should be feeling very cute.
I hope somebody counts how many times you said cute in this episode.
I'm sorry.
It's her new phrase. It's her phrase du jour. I love it. I was talking with some people this weekend, and they were like, you know when like a meme is just in your head and it's the only thing that you can think of? I'm like, that's this. It's just switching your head right now.
Yeah.
Parker runs over and gives the two of them like a hug. She's like, I missed you guys this week. Good game.
Like she hasn't seen them in like a month or something.
She really hasn't. I don't think they've really seen each other much. And on the other side, it says hallway on the transcript from leverage.whendarknessfalls.net. Thank you for your lovely transcripts. It says they're in the hallway, but I thought they were like on the other side of the room. But Nate tries to compliment Elliot, and Elliot's not.
Like, congratulations, not falling for it. You figured it out, right?
Yeah. But Elliot's like, I know what you're trying to do. Like, you could have told me how to hook him the whole time, but you wanted to see if I could figure it out on my own. And he's like, and I'm really hoping and trusting that you're going to tell me why kind of game you're playing. And Nate's just like, good job. And then walks away. And that's
laying groundwork for like the overarching of the season, which we won't get too much into right now.
Right. And Elliot, Christian Kane is so good. Like, I think he's so underrated. Not by anybody on Leverage or on this podcast, but he smiles. Like, he's like, yeah, I did a good job, and the leader of my crew complimented me. But then he thinks it through and he stops smiling, and he's like, this,
something's up, something's up, something is right.
Rotten in the state of Denmark. And that ends the episode, and you're like, oh!
Oh, wait, what was that thing you wanted to talk about earlier that was spoilery?
Oh, they, in the commentary, were talking about Snyder and Baron, and that, just like in the last episode with the Fish and Wildlife people, they were like, we just want to write a whole series about these two minor characters, but they wanted to, first off, they said, the only reason that he's her assistant is that he's the only one that she interviewed who didn't fall in love with her. And they didn't like outright say he was gay or that he was like asexual or something, but they're just like, he doesn't fall for her wiles. And I thought that was really interesting.
Bit of grudging respect for that. Like he does not bend to her ways.
Yeah. But then they wanted to write a whole series where he was on the run from the FBI or from the federal, you know, FBI or whatever. And she's trying to kill him from prison.
I mean, realistically, what would happen is probably he would sing like a canary and plead out and sell out like Baron and cut himself a deal. Like, that's realistically, that was probably what would happen. And like,
in which case,
will use him to get to the big fish.
Right. And in which case, she's really going to try to kill him from prison as he's trying to dodge these assassins or whatever. I would watch that show.
I mean,
right. Okay. Any last thoughts on this episode?
I never really thought about cheerleaders that much in my life. However, this is my bread and butter. I love politics. I'm a political junkie. So I felt that's why I wanted to do this episode. It's a good one.
It is a good one. And you know, I don't know. I think it was weird, but it fit together the two things really well.
And like you said, I'm impressed with how many personas Gina Bellman had to do in this episode. How many? At least 4 or 5 different accents.
Yeah. And like many in one day.
The Sophie one, the Von Cleef one, the Middle Eastern one, and then the one Rochester that she uses one. For Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one she used with the New York the congressman. Oh, and there was that instance where she's like horse trading, and then that like Arizona congressman walks by her and just gives her this look, a smug look, and say, like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, so you think you're hot stuff, huh? And then Sophie's like, again, not feeling cute. And that will be my last reference. Actually, I do. Let me pull it up. I found one from the LA Times. An investigation of the International Weightlifting Federation has found decades of corruption, millions in mission cash, and a cover-up that allowed top athletes to compete despite testing positive for performance-enhancing drugs. There was a report that was issued and that placed most of the blame from one Thomas Asian, the Wrestling Federation's general secretary and president for 44 years, who resigned. Basically, he just used cash. So, you know, the power of the purse strings, basically. This article's from the LA Times, and say the investigation was triggered by a documentary that aired in 2020 on a German TV network. And the person who did the investigation and report was enlisted soon after, and you know, so basically they're saying this Asian person personally collected fines, some as much as up to like $100,000 from federations whose athletes were caught doping. So basically so much money, and at one point there was more than $10 million that was unaccounted for. So McLaren, who's written the report, is saying Asian used that money for bribery to ensure votes for his elections and for to make sure the people he wanted in his inner circle, were also voted. And so he was saying, the quote was like, the report is saying the control exerted by Dr. Asian was absolute and infamous. And then he ran the Wrestling Federation as of his own personal fiefdom. So there were investigators discovered files that showed 40 positive doping tests from prominent weightlifters. So now they're saying relevant evidence will be turned over to the World Anti-Doping Agency, which I did not know was a thing. So the International Olympic Committee said it was going to seek to determine whether there are any doping cases concerning the Olympic Games, and that's going to be following up. So, kind of ick.
Yeah.
Okay, I just sent it to you. So, if you want to include a link to it, you can.
Yeah.
So, oof. Well, I mean, it was just sports related, so I thought it was going to be good for this episode. Good to use. So, do you have one?
I have one. I was just thinking I would mention the show or the movie Sugar and Spice, which was a teen like black comedy or dark comedy movie about a group of high school cheerleaders who conspire and commit armed robbery when one of them becomes pregnant. Which is like a kind of a heist.
Good heavens!
Yes. It came out in 2001, and it had Marla Sokolov, Marley Shelton, Mina Suvari, James Marsden in it. And it was based on an actual story, an actual thing that happened from May to July 1999. Four teenage girls from the Kingwood region of Houston, which is about an hour from me, engaged in a robbery spree, robbing four grocery stores and a bakery. And they called themselves the Queens of Armed Robbery. and they bought recreational drugs and body piercings with their money.
Oh Lord, why body piercings?
Because it was 1999, everybody wanted their belly button pierced.
So, I blame Gwen Stefani for that.
Hey, you leave Gwen Stefani alone. if people want to get their belly buttons pierced,
I said what I said.
I'll fight you. But yeah, so the girls planned the crimes while eating at a Kingwood Wendy's. The group targeted five places: Stop and Drive, Ryan's Bakery, Jack's Food Store / Jack's Grocery, Porter Food Store, and a store in Montgomery County, which are all like on the periphery of Kingwood. The first location was robbed May 30th, and then another one was robbed on the July 1st. I think they got about $800 there, which is about $1,400 today.
I mean, that's not nothing,
right? What does it say? Their weapons were a 22 caliber rifle, a semi-automatic pistol, and a shotgun.
I mean, that shows that's Texas. When even teen girls know how to handle a gun.
Oh yeah, they disguised themselves as men by using sunglasses, masks, hoods, and gloves. In the movie, it's a lot funnier. They disguise themselves with silly masks. But Shayla Dewan of the Houston Press wrote that, according to Billy Stevens of the Houston Police Department, the fact that the robberies were so well planned and executed was what struck him the most, and not merely that the perpetrators were upper middle class females. He didn't think that they were smart enough to plan well executed robberies. I don't know.
These are teenagers who are not exactly known for strategic long-term thinking. Teens are not exactly known for that, or having impulse control.
Yeah,
you know, we're having discipline.
Some newspapers referred to the crime as Quentin Tarantino comes to Pleasantville.
Now that's an image.
Yeah, and they had, because they were upper middle class rich white girls, they got off really lenient.
Of course they did.
Yeah,
of course they did.
So
probably just probation.
Let me see. Two of them pled guilty, and chose to have juries determine their sentences, and they got two concurrent prison sentences of 7 years with parole eligibility in 3 years. One of the girls testified against them and received deferred adjudication. She had to attend boot camp in Atascocita. And she had to serve 10 years of probation and perform 2,000 hours of community service. And she stayed in her car. So she, during the robbery, she like drove the getaway car. So she got a lighter sentence. Another one chose to stay in the Dallas County Jail as her appeal was launched, so that she wouldn't have to serve as many. If a prisoner is sentenced to fewer than 10 years in prison in Texas, he or she may stay in a county jail while his or her appeal occurs. As of 2000, Dunn was located at the Harris County Jail, and Marzecca was in the Lucille Plain State Jail. Two of the girls had their first parole eligibility in 2003. So actually they did go to prison. But Marzecca received her GED while in prison and got her associate's degree, and UT accepted her so she could do her studies for a bachelor's degree.
Lord.
There you go. If only that happened to everybody who went to prison. Not just
really. You would think.
It'd be nice. And then you could, you know, combat
recidivism.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. But yeah, that's the true story behind the movie Sugar and Spice. I think Sugar and Spice is a much sweeter story. Because they're trying to help out their friend. And not just getting body piercings. And Charlie agrees. So that's about it. Lisa, tell people where they can find you on the internet.
I'm at LaFaresta1 on Twitter. That's mostly where you will be able to find me.
My Twitter handle is at LibrarianSteve. You can find me there any time of the day or night. And you won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in two-ish weeks, I will be talking about the DB Cooper job. Robin and my friend Jen are going to be on to talk about that.
And I will be back for one of my favorites, the broken wing job.
Yes, not long after that. And then you're back to back because you're in the frame up job too. Lisa, thank you so much for coming on the episode.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
All right. Bye.
Bye, y'all.